Good Wednesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown. ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on the Game Nashville app as well. How's it going? Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson back at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. And Ryan, guess what day it is?
Hump day.
That's right. Another hump day here on the show. You're almost halfway there through yet another week in 2020, I think is the best way to put it. So hope everybody is having a great day today so far. But we got a big show for you coming up, including this question, because, you know, this is the time where you have a lot of NFL players. They've been doing Zoom calls or however they're doing media relations these days. Lamar Jackson, the quarterback, the reigning MVP of the Baltimore Ravens, said yesterday something quite interesting that sparked our interest here in Nashville. Here's what he had to say.
That's the goal. Like, I got to play. Like, we taking it one game at a time. I'm not peeking ahead. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what happened in the playoffs, and we end up losing to the team people had us favored over. You know, but it's any given Sunday. You can't underestimate no team, no opponent, and that's what we did. So I'm looking for this 2020 season. And the Browns first.
Was there any other lesson you learned from the playoff loss? Because, you know, obviously that was really unexpected and caught, like, pretty much everyone by surprise that wasn't, you know, essentially like a Titans fan.
Like I said, don't underestimate your opponents. They caught us by surprise.
But did you think you guys did, though? Did you guys really underestimate them? Or was it just a bad day at the office?
That's what it looked like. It was a bad day at the office.
That looked like a really bad day, yeah.
A very bad day. All of them, like, I was hoping the game myself. So, like, that's what did it right there. So.
Can we?
It don't matter.
Lamar Jackson, the quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens. So, Ryan, did I hear him correctly that basically he said that they overlooked the Tennessee Titans?
Yes, you did hear that correctly.
Yeah.
100%.
That's what I thought that he said. Now, I kind of wondered that. I was there. I saw it. But I'll counter it with this. Because you look at Lamar Jackson, I mean, he still had a statistically, if you just look at the numbers, you're like, all right, that's still pretty decent outside of the two interceptions. And those two interceptions were costly for the Baltimore Ravens. So my counter to that is not necessarily that they overlooked the Tennessee Titans, but that the Tennessee Titans were just ready. That Vrabel and Dean Pease had a game plan, and they knew how to attack that offense, and they did a very good job of it. Because as we talked about after that, Ryan Tannehill, 7 of 14, 88 yards, 2 touchdowns. He capitalized on the mistakes that the defense caused the Ravens offense to make. And, of course, Derrick Henry, the big truck, Tractorcito, as you say, 30 carries, 195 yards in that win in the playoffs. So I think you got to give the Titans a little bit of credit, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be both. I think the Titans were absolutely 100% ready to play that game. And maybe the Baltimore Ravens were just looking at that game as a stepping stone to the Super Bowl and weren't treating it to the extent that the Titans treated it. And I'm not surprised by that. I mean, the Titans, it's not like they went into New England and just rolled the Patriots. I mean, that was an ugly football game. The Titans did what they needed to do to win that game. But it's not like the Titans came in all guns a-blazing offensively from that Patriots game, or really the end of the season. I mean, the Texans game and the Patriots game, it was pretty much all Derrick Henry, and Earl Thomas talked a big game going into that divisional round of how they weren't scared of Derrick Henry. That was probably a mistake, but overall, I'm not necessarily surprised to hear Lamar Jackson come out and say that they overlooked the Titans, because it kind of felt that way. But I'm not going to sit here and take something away from the Titans, because they absolutely earned that victory.
So if you're a fan base, for instance, and you hear your MVP quarterback come out and say, yeah, we overlooked an opponent, how do you react to that? Do you like hearing that, okay, they admitted it, they weren't ready, maybe this is a lesson? Because we forget, I mean, he's still a young quarterback. What is this, year 3 that he's going into, year 4? I think that it's admirable for him to say, yeah, maybe that's one that we could learn something from, and we need to do better next time. But at the same time, do you like hearing him admit that he made a mistake and that they overlooked a team?
If I was a Ravens fan, I appreciate the honesty. because if you were a Ravens fan who watched that team week in and week out all season long and how they just shredded opposing defenses, and you watched that game against the Titans, you knew something was off that night. You know, we have a mutual friend in Baltimore who thought the same thing sitting in that stadium, that something was off early in that game. You were there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would like to hear from you. You know, now hearing Lamar Jackson's comments, does that game make more sense now that you've read and heard Lamar Jackson talk about that game?
Yeah, a little bit. And you kind of knew – you knew that it wasn't going to be as easy as Baltimore thought it was going to be after that first interception, because what did the Titans do? The Titans marched downfield and they scored. And so you knew, okay, Titans are here to play, but there was still, even though I felt and I had been saying all week, hey, don't underestimate Tennessee. Tennessee is hungry. They could make this interesting. I wasn't ready at that point in the game to say, all right, Titans are going to win this. Then they had the turn. They forced Baltimore to turn the ball over on downs, so you felt even better about it. And then they scored. The Titans score again. It was at that point where I felt like they were in Lamar's head. At that point they were in Lamar Jackson's head, and that's all in the first quarter. Now I knew that Harbaugh, of course, veteran coach, and that the fans hadn't given up yet. I mean, it was still very loud in that stadium. They hadn't completely sucked the life out of it, but it was getting close. And then just as it played out, there was another turnover on downs. Of course, another fumble interception later on. I mean, the Titans were all up in Baltimore's business at that point. So I would say by halftime, I was feeling pretty confident. I was feeling pretty good about the Titans at that point because of how they started the second half. That, like, all right, yeah, this is probably going to happen. So it was that ebbs and flows that you don't want to get too cocky too fast, but it was very apparent to me that the Titans were ready and Baltimore wasn't. And something that was discussed in the press box was you look at the time in between games for the Ravens. I mean, even the starters didn't play the last week of the season. They had the bye. I mean, they basically had 3 weeks or thereabouts in between games. That's a long time. That's a long time to go up against a tough NFL squad that had been playing and had just come off an emotional victory against the Patriots. So I think that was a part of it as well.
Well, and we've seen that burn teams in the past. The first team that comes to mind for me is the 15-1 Packers from either 2011 or 2012, where they did the same exact thing. They may have even started resting players in week 16 to get ready for the playoffs, and then they got just boat raced by the New York Giants, and I think that's the year the Giants went on to win the Super Bowl against the Patriots in Indianapolis. You know, the big thing or the big plays in that game were really the fourth downs that the Ravens missed.
Yep,
because the Ravens moved the ball. They had over 500 yards of total offense in that game, if I'm not mistaken. But they missed the 4th-and-1 at the start of the second quarter, and the next play, Ryan Tannehill play action to Khalif Raymond, and that made it 14-0. That was a monster moment within that game. I mean, almost every single Ravens drive ended in positive territory for them in the Titans, in the Titans defensive mm-hmm. zone, and the Titans, they had that bend but don't break defense that night, and you know, I know Lamar Jackson threw two interceptions, fumbled it. You know, they were all out of sorts, but they still moved the ball plenty enough to at least be in that game a lot more than they were. But, you know, at the beginning of the third quarter, or maybe it was midway through, when Derrick Henry had the jump pass to Corey Davis, you knew right then and there that the Titans were going to win that game.
Yep.
That put them up 21-6 at that point.
Yeah, and you also brought up the turnovers in general, all but one, and that includes a turnover on downs, but all but one after the Baltimore turned the ball over, the Titans scored a touchdown. That interception, touchdown, turnover on downs, touchdown. Then you go into the second half to start the third quarter, turnover on downs, touchdown, fumble, touchdown, and then the interception on their next possession, the Titans end up punting. And then Baltimore answered. They, you know, they had a little bit of life left in them. Answered there towards the end, but and then I guess there was another turnover on downs that resulted in a punt, but and then the end of the game. But you have to give the Titans defense a lot of credit that night for rattling a young quarterback, for not allowing them to get any momentum, because as we know with that Baltimore team, because they were so good, that if you let them get their confidence and let them get momentum, just like we saw the next week against Kansas City, once Patrick Mahomes got his confidence back and they got that momentum going, there was no stopping them. And mm-hmm. that's what separates those great teams from the rest. And the Titans did a good job against Baltimore, not allowing them to get to that point. Couldn't do the same with Kansas City. So that was the story. And that leads us into what we've been talking about for the last few weeks on if they get Jadeveon Clowney and improve that pass rush of stopping teams like the Ravens and like the Chiefs. You know, a guy that was a big part of stopping the Ravens isn't here anymore, Jarrell Casey. So you have to replace that. You have to find that next guy, whether he's on the team already or he's not on the team. You got to find that guy that's going to be able to, as Floyd Reese likes to say, make a play. That's all you're looking for.
Yeah, and the Titans made the plays that really counted in that game. You can look at the team stats all you want, but the Titans made plays, and the Ravens did not when it was, you know, all chips on the table. And hearing Lamar Jackson's comments make me wonder how the Ravens are going to treat that week 11 game in Baltimore when the Titans return to the scene of the crime, if you want to call it that, where they went into Baltimore, they win that playoff game, Lamar Jackson comes out and says that they overlooked the Titans. Are they going to circle that game and say, we have to get revenge on this Titans team on November 22nd?
I mean, if you're a Baltimore fan, I hope they're thinking
I would hope, yeah.
I mean, I hope that's their mindset.
I mean, if I'm a Ravens fan,
it's flexed.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. At least a 325. If I'm a Ravens fan, I like the honesty, but I also don't want to see that again.
Right.
Like Lamar Jackson, it's only been two playoff games, but he's already building a little bit of an early stigma about his postseason play. Mm-hmm. How he's been really good in the regular season, but when it comes to the playoffs and you face a good defense like the Chargers 2 years ago or the Titans last year, that maybe he doesn't have it all together when it comes to the big moments. So if you're the Ravens, this is a huge season because you would think that they have improved themselves with all the offseason additions and the great draft that they had, improved themselves to the point where it's them or the Chiefs to go to the Super Bowl. And if Lamar Jackson falls on his face again in the playoffs, then I think there's going to be a lot of people in Baltimore wondering whether or not he's going to ever lead them to a Super Bowl. Might be premature to have that conversation. We had that conversation for years about Peyton Manning and Indy, but that won't keep the conversation from actually happening in Baltimore.
How will the Titans adjust to not being overlooked after last year's run? We'll discuss that when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. RockNashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to donate to Second Harvest Food Bank of Middle Tennessee to support their mission of feeding hungry people, as well as other ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's RockNashville.com. Back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson, hanging out with you on a hump day, asking the question. We heard Lamar Jackson's comments earlier that they may have overlooked the Tennessee Titans last year. I think that we all agree that most people may have overlooked the Tennessee Titans last year as they made the run into the playoffs. They beat the Patriots, they beat the Ravens, and they had a very close game at first with the Kansas City Chiefs before the Chiefs took control of that game and went on, of course, to win the Super Bowl last season. So whenever you have that kind of success, it's safe to say that you're not going to fly under the radar anymore. And a prime example of this, Ryan, is something that you and I lived just a few years ago. You've heard us with our Game 6 Remastered. We remember that season for the Nashville Predators, and how they barely made it into the playoffs. They were the last team in. And what ended up happening? They went to the Stanley Cup final. Well, the next year, they weren't being overlooked at all. They had a lot of pressure on them to start that season, and ended up having, of course, we remember the President's Trophy winning season for that team. They won the division and looked like they were the team to beat. They had answered the pressure. They get a tough Winnipeg team in the second round, losing seven games. I mean, I don't think that's really anything that you can hold your head down about. That's just a tough team and a tough loss. But I felt for the most part, and you tell me if you disagree, they handled the pressure of knowing everybody knows who we are now. We have to answer the bell and just see what happens.
Yeah, and look, you bring up the 2018 Nashville Predators team, and not only because of what they did in the prior postseason in 2017 to go all the way to the Stanley Cup final, but they were the President's Trophy winners in the regular season. They were the top team in the NHL. They went on, I believe it was, a 15-game point streak in the second half of the season, where they were just hitting on all cylinders going into the playoffs. And I think we all felt here,
that team was better. Let's just be honest. That team was better than the Cup team.
Absolutely. It was absolutely better, at least in the regular season. But when they got to the postseason, it almost felt like that team was facing, or maybe I should say feeling, some of that pressure to get back to the Stanley Cup final. And I think a lot of fans just thought, you know, snap of a finger, it was going to happen again, get back to the Cup final and win it and get redemption and finally get that 16th win in the postseason and hoist Lord Stanley Cup. But it doesn't always work out that way. And even though they had a better regular season, they didn't have as good of a postseason. And, you know, I've said this before, and you've said it too, of the Titans could easily go 10-6 or 11-5 this upcoming season, be better, win the division, host a playoff game, and not reach the AFC championship. You see cases like this all sure. the time in sports. You can also harken back, let's use baseball as an example, where the Kansas City Royals went on a magical playoff run. They lose to the Giants in the World Series, then they bounce back the next year and beat the Mets in the World Series, and they get redemption. They win the World Series. And there's no reason why, if the Titans can add some pieces before training camp or the start of the regular season, that they couldn't put it all together again and maybe catch another break or two and find themselves in the Super Bowl. You know, as long as they don't have to go through both Baltimore and Kansas City. If they have to do that again, I don't know if I like their chances, but if they only have to go through one, why not?
Yeah.
But it all comes down to, in my opinion, the mentality. Because if you go in expecting something to happen or feeling the pressure, you're probably not going to enjoy the result that you get. But if you go in treating it like it's, you know, the old cliche of one game at a time or just another game, what have you, and you treat every single game as a singular entity, then I don't know why this Titans team couldn't replicate what they did last season.
Well, and I'll say this too, just to, in contrary to this conversation, I do believe they're not going to be as overlooked, but at the same time, I don't think the so-called experts are going to put the Titans in their upper echelon of NFL teams going into this season. I think we all would think, all right, they're going to compete for the AFC South. They should win the AFC South. If they get Clowney, they even more should win the AFC South, is how people are going to look at it. But you still have to get through Baltimore. You still have to get through Kansas City. So I think the experts are going to look at it like that. I don't even think people are going to put them as the third best team in the conference. And so I think that they have that to their advantage of, they can still have that mentality, like that chip on their shoulder, like they've had of, okay, you want to sleep on the Titans? We'll take it one game at a time. Watch what we can do. So I feel like this group, just how they are, how they're wired, I think that that's good for them.
Well, yes, you bring up the third best team in the AFC. I don't know if there is a defined third best team in the AFC. I think a lot of people look at the AFC as it's the Chiefs, the Ravens, and everybody else. But why couldn't the Titans be the third best team in the AFC? I mean, who else is
they're going to have to prove it
clearly better than the Titans? I mean, the Patriots aren't. The Bills aren't. You look at the AFC West, I don't see any team, you know, below Kansas City as challenging for the third best team in the AFC.
Yeah.
I don't think Pittsburgh is the third best. I don't think, you know, if you have the Titans.
Pittsburgh is the one that could be. Like, I put Pittsburgh in the could category. Yeah, I mean, I'm never going to.
Ben would have to have a big bounce back.
Yeah, I mean, they may have to wheel him out there for every start, but until he's dead, I'm not going to rule him out.
Yeah.
And I just that guy's had a Hall of Fame career for a reason. So, I mean, Buffalo,
But no. The process of elimination that we're going through right now lends you to think that the Titans might be the third best team in the AFC if they don't let the success of last postseason get to their head.
Let's play this fun game. This is on the spot. We're going to do this. I'm going to go through the AFC very fast, and you just tell me if you trust this team or you don't trust this team. This is how we're going to get to this question. Baltimore, yes. Trust them. Feel like they're legit. Agree?
Agree.
Okay. Pittsburgh.
Better than the Titans or worse?
I'm just asking, do you trust them that they could put themselves in that position to be one of the best in the AFC? Trust or no trust? It's yes
no
or
trust. No.
Cleveland.
No.
Cincinnati.
No.
Okay. Kansas City, yes. Denver.
No.
Las Vegas. Almost said
no.
Chargers.
No.
Pats.
No, because of Brady. But it wouldn't surprise me if Belichick worked his magic and they are right there in the playoffs again.
I'm saying yes because of Belichick. I'm not. He's another one. Until he's gone, I'm not sleeping on him. I'm not ruling him out. So I'm not sleeping on the Patriots at all until they give me a reason to. Buffalo.
No.
No. Jets.
No.
Dolphins? No.
No.
Now the South. Texans?
No. Without DeAndre Hopkins, no.
I say no. Jags? Hell no. Colts?
Not with old man Rivers.
So you are in the camp of saying old man Rivers, there's nothing left. The rest of the team, you're going to rule them out because of him.
I'm not ruling them out. I just I don't trust Philip Rivers to be that big of an upgrade over Jacoby Brissett. And Jacoby Brissett was very average last season.
But you also have to factor in a lot of things. Yes, he was average, but basically 3 weeks before the season, he goes from being the backup to the starter. So there are a lot of different factors with that. I semi-trust the Colts. Like they're going to concern me until I sit down and I watch the Titans play them and they take away all those concerns. And yes, there's history involved with that. There's just I am scared of that horseshoe because of the pain that they have caused the Tennessee Titans over the last decade or more, going back to this guy named Manning that used to be their quarterback. So I know that it's a different team, different coach, different looking organization. But until the Titans can really slay that beast, so to speak, I'm always going to be a little bit worried. So that exercise, the point of that is, I actually did that to prove your point for you, because you're right. I think you can't definitively say that they are the third best team until you see it, but they are certainly worthy of being one of the top teams in that conversation. To be that.
I mean, when we go through the process of elimination that we just went through, I agree.
But they're going to have to prove it. They can't they're not good enough to, and I'm not saying this is how they think, but they're not good enough to walk in a room and go, yo, what up? Here we are. Kansas City is, Baltimore is. Those are the only two teams that can do that,
well,
in my opinion, in the AFC.
Baltimore did that in the divisional round, according to Lamar Jackson, and it cost them.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. That is a very good point. And they learned, but did they learn from that?
We will find out.
That is the question. So, man, it's good to talk football. I'm ready for football. I'm ready for something, but definitely ready for football. Speaking of being ready, the NBA, they're ready. I mean, they have a plan. There's a 100-page document laying out the life in the bubble. Marquise is going to read all that to us when we come back. Just kidding. But we will discuss that and some things that could possibly happen. We'll do that when we return here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Dad rocks the gold. Enter for a chance to win Dad a Pred Store gift card of $75. All you have to do is submit a photo of your dad rocking the gold on Twitter. Tag us at 102.5 The Game and use the hashtag DadRocksTheGold. You can also submit a photo to our website at thegamenashville.com. Get your submission in today as the contest will close Friday afternoon. Great contest, great gift for Dad, just in time for Father's Day. Welcome back into The Rundown. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. And Marquise, I guess, are you packing? Are you going to go to the bubble that the NBA is going to have at Disney World? Because I was reading through all this stuff. I think they got a lot going on there at the bubble.
Look, they got a barber there too. So just in case I can't go to the barber here because we get dropped down to phase one again, I'm going to Orlando. And I'm just going to be hanging out with LeBron James and kicking it in the bubble in the VIP lounge, playing 2K with them, and then getting on the snitch hotline and then calling and say, Chris Paul's over here coughing. Get him out of the bubble so I can get his team eliminated. Hotline. That's basically what it is.
I know.
it is a tattletale hotline. So basically, there's like a hotline that they can call that if some player is breaking the procedures of the bubble, then you can just call this hotline and say, hey, man, get LeBron out of the bubble. Get the Lakers out of here. I see LeBron. He's breaking the rules in the bubble.
Do you think Paul George is going to do that?
Yes. I think somebody's going to do
it. There's going to be a story. I think there'll be a story that comes out of this of one of these dudes on the snitch line, as Marquise calls it, trying to stir up something. I would not be shocked at all if Woj, you know, comes in on SportsCenter going, well, we're getting a report that so-and-so
I can't wait to the rapid reports from the hotline. And then it can go anonymous, too. So it's just like, oh, so what's your name? You want to state your name? Paul George. And then hang up. And then I'm really Chris Paul.
And then on Twitter, it becomes hashtag Bubblegate.
Yeah, Bubblegate. Yes. I love it, man. NBA is just so exciting. NBA always finds a way to make things entertaining.
It's a soap opera.
And this is just another example of the NBA making things interesting, and I love it.
So I'm gonna quickly just kind of give some of the highlights of this. So once you're in the bubble, you have to self-isolate in your hotel room for up to 48 hours until a person has two negative COVID-19 tests. So that's how things will start out. Then you can't go to each other's rooms. Through July 21st, players cannot socialize with players staying at other hotels. They're using three different hotels in this bubble. Each team will have its own chef and food room that is open up to 24 hours a day. What a rough life that's going to be. And I think Disney's providing all that unless a team wants to bring some of their own people. They're trying not to bring food inside it out. They have to use the Disney Magic Band. That's going to get them in and out of rooms and let everybody know that they're legal. They'll have video games, card tables, ping pong, other recreational activities. I even read that they may bring in, like, comedians bring in entertainment for them. And this is what pissed me off. They're going to get the Black Widow movie before everybody. They're going to get all these movies released before we get to see them in the theater. Black Widow was supposed to come out this summer, and I'm bummed that they're going to get to see that before I am. I want to play in the NBA just so I can watch movies.
You watch enough movies.
I do, but I love the Marvel movies. So this is, you know, they can use the pools, trails, golf courses. So while they're there to do a job and they're you know, there are a lot of rules to try and keep everybody safe. I mean, this doesn't sound like all that bad to be living in the Disney bubble.
And playing in the NBA, making millions of dollars.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't suck to be them. That's just kind of how I look at this. Now, one thing that, and I sent you this tweet. This is from Keith Smith, covers the NBA. He says, per a Walt Disney World source, our MLS partners have told us that they would love to have NBA players attend their games during their downtime. The NBA has not indicated if they will allow the same, but we think that that is something the two leagues may be able to work out. Because, as we know, the MLS is going to be there, too. They're going to be using the wide world of sports. So they're all going to be there. I mean, it's a huge complex, huge facility, but they're all going to be there. I think that's interesting because we've heard the reports, and Marquise, you chime in here. Heard the reports of possibly using the NBA 2K sound effects for, you know, for the crowd noise and pumping in crowd noise. And we've had that discussion before of, do you want to hear fake crowd noise or you just want to hear the Nat sound? I think it would be cool if you use some of the MLS teams as the fans, as the audience, and then use some of the NBA teams as the audience for MLS.
Well, to me, it is obvious why the MLS wants the NBA players to do this.
It's obvious.
Do you know why I'm going down that road?
No. Oh, because soccer relies on the fans so much?
No, because the NBA players, if they are in attendance, they will be promoting the crap out of the fact that they are in the stadium, like Alvin Kamara with NASCAR.
True.
Bringing more attention to NASCAR, where if LeBron James or James Harden or, you know, whomever in that bubble on their off day for between playoff games in the NBA or practice days, if they are attending MLS games, they are going to be tweeting about it. They're going to be putting it on the Insta, on their Insta story, on their Snapchat story, and all of a sudden the MLS is getting a lot of free pub.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Can you imagine John Morant wearing a Nashville SC jersey?
How beautiful would that be?
That would be fantastic. Because LeBron's not going to do it. I would wish LeBron would wear one, but he's probably going to wear like the LA Football Club or the Galaxy's jersey or whatever. But Ja Morant and a Nashville SC jersey, and that would be awesome. That's great cross promotion for Tennessee.
That would be amazing.
So I think as a proud partner of Nashville SC, because you hear their games on ESPN 94.9, we should do this, Ryan and Marquise. We should start a campaign. If this in fact happens, if they work this deal out where the NBA players can go to an MLS game, we need to start recruiting. We'll tweet every day like I did with Tom Brady, even though that didn't work. I feel more confident in this. We need to tweet NBA stars every day and try and recruit them to Nashville SC. You bring up a fantastic point because that's what's going to happen. This is going to be huge for social media in promoting. I mean, yeah, you're going to promote the NBA, but they don't really need help. MLS, though, this is going to be big for them with all these stars on social media. I mean, LeBron James sitting at an MLS game or whoever. Yeah, this is exactly why. This is a very good point by you. I think it would be a cool idea because I don't want to hear fake crowd noise. I would rather hear silence than the fake crowd noise that doesn't match up.
Well, the silence and the fact that there aren't fans is a huge subplot to the return of live sports like this with the NBA, with the NHL, and with Major League Soccer. And I would much rather get a feel for what that is like in that stadium than hear fake crowd noise.
Sure. So would I. And in the sports that obviously NASCAR is different because you don't really hear the fans anyway on TV. You hear engines. But UFC, we've watched UFC. It's been a little weird, but it hasn't bothered me. It hasn't really taken away from the experience of watching it. WWE, it was weird. Because, and I was watching WWE backstage last night, Bret the Hitman Hart was on there, and he said the thing that's been weird in the third element in a match, you have to have the two competitors, but the third element is always the crowd. And so that there is something really missing, and they've brought in developmental wrestlers that train at their training facility to make like a makeshift crowd, but it's still not the same. So that definitely has taken something away. I won't know until I see it with hockey, which I'm going to assume there's going to be something missing because we all know what that's like. The NBA, MLS, baseball won't, you know, have to worry about anything. So I had to get my baseball shot in today.
There you go.
So I feel better. But, yeah, I think that that's going to be a big element that's missing. And so if you have them there, if you have NBA players or you have – because, listen, they can pipe in movies and bring video games and go play golf. They're going to get bored. And I'm not saying that to feel sorry for them, but it's like at least give them another option. And if they want to go watch other athletes compete, I think that's a great option.
You know, one thing with NBA games when it comes to the telecast and having the natural sound, NBA games, when you attend a game and you can hear it sometimes on TV when you're watching an NBA game, there is a soundtrack going on in the background. It's not like it's just 100% crowd noise. There is a DJ element to a lot of NBA games where you can hear some music that they're playing almost as bed music behind all the action on the floor. And I would assume that would remain the same or maybe be amplified within the NBA presentation when they return to action. But I was listening to Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick on the 31 Thoughts podcast here in the last couple days. And they made mention of what if the NHL were to do that instead of, you know, playing in just an empty arena where you're not going to get any crowd noise. All it is going to be sound effects of the puck hitting the boards or the post and the sticks clashing and a lot of profanity on the ice potentially.
Which is what I'm actually excited about.
Yes.
I want whoever, you know, NBC, SN, I mean, you're on cable. Let's show some uncensored stuff. I mean, even if it's only got to be the late games, like put the kids to bed. I want to hear that stuff. I want to hear the gnat sounds, and that's a part of it.
Sure. But, you know, Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick were pondering whether or not the NHL would consider putting in some sort of bed music type element like the NBA has already. And I thought it was an interesting thought.
I would just rather them just play music or something in the background than piped in crowd noise. That just sounds weird. Now, I think in this bubble that players who are not playing in a game could also go watch other games. But however, like if you ever watch the game with a basketball player, they're usually not like cheering or nothing. They're just like watching. Like literally, like it's just observing the game. So that probably wouldn't work out either. But if you put in some music and, you know, have it a little lively in there, like yeah, I think it'd be fine. But just the 2K noise is just ridiculous.
I want them to have pop cam, you know, during the other games. Let's just show Greg Popovich the whole time because he just fascinates me. I love that man. He is just a gift.
Well, you may not get many games with pop cam. Because the Spurs aren't very good.
I know they're not. I know. But
you'll get eight of them at least. That's fine.
And
that's
you know what? I will cherish those eight games. I will cherish them forever. The thing, too, that I hope happens in both, really all sports, is you still have game ops. Bring in some game ops people and not just music. Have the, you know, the pump-up cartoon things that they show or the graphics. That's what I'm trying to say. I think
the pump-up cartoon things?
Just forgive me. I say still use that stuff, the game ops elements that you see whenever you go to arena. I hope
and try to make it feel as natural as possible.
Yeah, I think that helps the players too. I mean, I think that they hear that, and that's gonna help them. And that way, it won't feel like a scrimmage or feel like practice. It'll feel like an actual game. But I think that we'll see as this continues to develop.
By the way, I just tweeted John Morant.
Oh, good.
I just tweeted. Yes, I said, what's up, John Morant, with a gif of John Morant. If you're able to make a MLS game, make sure you check out Nashville SC game. Let's rep Tennessee out there in Orlando.
See, that's good. This is good. The process has begun.
Isn't the relationship between the Grizzlies and the Predators on Fox Sports Tennessee? I can't think of their slogan off the top of my head. Is it Team Tennessee?
Yeah, Team Tennessee.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we are.
Yeah.
So let's get that going for sure. There is another element of all this that I want to get into when we come back. We'll do that next. The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app. Enable our Alexa skill or Google Home and ask to play 102.5 The Game. Or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Welcome back into The Rundown. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, and the radio messiah, Marquise Munson, hanging out with you on a Wednesday. So another element to all of this will be just how the product looks on television, just with the broadcasters, or how it sounds, I really should say, because it would appear that those that are going to be calling the game most likely won't be on site. They're going to be at a remote location, whether it's the home arena or a studio, but they're going to pipe in the video feed for a broadcaster, a play-by-play, and a color analyst to call the action off a monitor. And you may hear that and you may ask yourself, well, that's going to take something away. Maybe it won't be as authentic. I really don't think so, because that's what NASCAR has been doing. And again, different. I understand that every sport's going to be different and you go about preparing for it in different ways. But that's how they've done it since the return. They've had Fox has had their broadcasters inside a studio in Charlotte, and then they've just watched off a monitor and called the action that way. I really don't think it's going to be all that different, because most broadcasters, you know, have a monitor to use anyway. Some use it more than others. There's going to be an adjustment period, but I really don't think it's going to take that much away from things.
Well, yes and no. There is the element of you being in the arena and being able to see the entire ice or the entire field, and being able to comment on things that you may not be able to see on your TV screen, or things within the crowd, things that are going on within the arena that you just wouldn't have at your disposal. So I do think it will be an adjustment for a pretty big adjustment for the broadcasters who would be calling the game off a TV screen. But I don't think fans at home are necessarily really going to care whether the broadcaster is in the hub city, in the arena, or calling the game off a studio screen here in Nashville or in another city.
Yeah. I think everybody, if you haven't already, then you need to, has accepted the fact that this is just going to be different no matter what.
Well, and yes, absolutely. And I would venture to guess that this has been happening pre-COVID more than people may realize with certain events. For instance, I remember back in whenever the World Cup was in Brazil, ESPN sent all sorts of different broadcast teams down there to televise games, but there were a select number of games that were called off a screen in Bristol. And you couldn't tell that was the case until they lost the crowd noise for about 20 seconds. I remember vividly watching the game, and they lost the crowd noise for more than just a couple seconds. It was probably a good 15, 20 seconds. And I'm sitting there like, holy smokes, they're not there. They are not in Brazil. They're somewhere else. And then I started listening for different things within what they were saying to see whether or not it was actually true. And then they misidentified a couple players, and I was like, oh my gosh, they're not there. And at that point, you don't really think of that even being a possibility, because the natural tendency is that all broadcasts and all broadcasters are doing their job from the stadium or from the arena and not at a remote location. But I think it's going to be almost the opposite now. There may only be one national crew doing a game in the arena, and then any other crews are probably going to be doing it remotely.
Yeah. I know ESPN with some of their lower level college games will do that. They will just have them do it from the booth, and they'll even have stand-up shots in front of a green screen, and you don't know. I mean, you think they've hung a green screen up in the booth at the stadium, but they do it that way because they're wearing their suits. I mean, they look like they're there, but you know, this is something that it's not new, is I guess what we're trying to say. You can also vote in our poll question in relation to this subject overall. When the NHL, NBA, and MLS return, how would you prefer to watch the game? with fake crowd noise or with natural venue sound. 84% of you right now are saying natural venue sound. You don't want the fake crowd noise. That doesn't really surprise me that it's that much, because I think we hear fake crowd noise and it's watering down is not the best way to put it, but it's fake. I mean, it's not authentic. I think we know that for this to be authentic, there's no crowd. So that's what it needs to be.
Right. I'm with you on this, and you know, it kind of goes back to what I think wasn't it Fox that came out, or maybe it was Joe Buck, was saying that the NFL could be putting video game virtual fans on the broadcast and using video game noise with the real life football going on the field. I don't know how you would do that. I wouldn't pretend to know, but that just wouldn't feel right. Like, it's a huge storyline for these sports to be going on without fans. I think the fans at home deserve to get the feel for what that's like.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. 615-737-1025. Nate wants to weigh in on this conversation. Nate, welcome in.
Well, first off, Chase, I think the word you're looking for is weird or strange. That's how it would sound if they put the...
I would never call you that, Nate. Oh, you meant this. Sorry.
The weird or strange would be the word you're looking for the fake crowd noise. But what I was calling about was how the announcers should call the game. We have heard from Willie that he doesn't like the idea of calling the game from the monitor because you can't see the whole ice. Well, what if we brought everyone down, or all of the broadcasters that we're going to call the games, to Bridgestone, pulled the three screens together in the Lexus Lounge, and you can see the whole ice that way?
So basically just have a bigger screen is what you're saying. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, yeah, that it's the panorama screen that shows the entire ice.
Right, yeah, we've... I would think if the NHL is going to supply some sort of feed outside of the TV feed, that they would do that, that they would provide different angles for the broadcasters that you necessarily would not see on TV.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, I would imagine that how this looks in game one is going to be different how it looks in, you know, game 20.
Totally.
Because you're going to have, let's just use an example of the NBA. Let's say Mike Breen does a game, and he does the first game. He's going to go back to his superiors. He's going to say, all right, so I liked that I had this angle and this, but I need this. I need you to add this. Is it possible to do this or that? I mean, those are the kind of conversations that are going to be happening, and that's the only way to do it. You have to do trial by fire, so to speak, with this, if you're not going to have them there. And like you said, they could have, like, Mike Breen could be one that's actually in the bubble, but and could be there live. But I think that's something that's just going to be evolving as they go along during this process. But that's the fun of it. So, cool conversation. Ryan, you enjoy the rest of the week. I'm going to have a couple of days off, so you and Marquise will be holding it down here the next few days. I know you have some things planned for the rundown, but that's going to do it for today's edition. For Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson, I am Chase McCabe. Stick around. Darren Donick and Chase, that's next. ESPN 102.5 The Game.